Hello and welcome to Friends in Your Ears, a podcast about podcasters talking about their favorite podcasts. I'm Kathy Campbell, and today I am joined by two absolutely fantastic guests. I have David J. Lohr and Erica Ensign. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello there.
All right, David, if you want to introduce yourself to our listeners.
My first question is, what are podcasts? I podcast way too much. What do people need to know about me? Well, I'm on The Incomparable a lot, and I write and sometimes direct and sometimes edit The Incomparable Radio Theater, now in its second adventure-filled season, which has gotten much sillier and consistently much longer with each episode, which is good. It's kind of a dream job, writing all kinds of things that I never thought I'd get to write for people who wanted to hear them. And, if you had told me 5 years ago, oh, you're going to get to do this, and this will eventually become the day job, I'd have said, no, you're crazy. No. And it really, I mean, it's even harvesting jokes that I've had in my brain for like 20 and 30 years, which no joke left behind. It's a good thing. I guess people can find me at theincomparable.com/radio. That's probably where I'm most productive right now. But I also have a website, just davidjlohr.com. I'll update it eventually, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
And you can find me on Twitter at dlohr.
Perfect. And what about you, Erica? Where can people find you?
Well, I'm also on Twitter at hollygodarkly. And many, many podcasts scattered across the interwebs. Here on the Incomparable Network, I am the co-host of the Lazy Doctor Who podcast and the co-host of the Beginner's Puck Hockey podcast and the co-host of the In the Village podcast on the TV feed talking about The Prisoner. And I also play Dungeons & Dragons here on the Incomparable on Total Party Kill and am on the flagship show from time to time. I also have a Doctor Who podcast called Verity, me and five other women, and the Audio Guide to Babylon 5 with me and a couple of co-hosts. And I also produce and read for the Uncanny Magazine podcast. Plus, you know, some other random things here and there. And in addition to my day job, I actually am one half of Castria, a communications and media solutions company. So I actually do have a job helping other people start their own podcasts and editing them and producing them and that sort of thing. So it's I'm steeped in podcasts from top to toe.
And we should say we both host things on the Incomparable Game Show, too.
Yes. That's true.
Yeah. And play a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. All games, all the time. So, I'm very excited for this afternoon.
Yep. Yeah, as a matter of fact, as soon as we're done recording this podcast, I will be heading to my shelf of Trivial Pursuits and unboxing many, many boxes to prepare for Random Pursuit.
I'm having flashbacks already.
I'm very excited. Okay, so let's get into the real questions that everybody's asking. David, how did you start listening to podcasts?
Well, I was an early adopter, right? That was right around when my first child was born. Podcasts and iPod and everything was just hitting. And I think, I mean, I was listening to like NPR shows on demand. I was listening to BBC on demand. The first straight up made for podcasts podcast I think I listened to was the TV Talk Machine, the original, not the version that's on the Incomparable right now, but when Tim Goodman was still the TV critic for the San Francisco Chronicle, he and one of the political reporters there, Joe Garofoli, had a podcast where they would talk about TV, and that was the idea, right? It was like, oh yeah, we'll talk about TV, and the editors were happy. And progressively, I don't know, I think maybe it took maybe 9 or 10 episodes before the balance between TV information and random silliness kind of tilted more to the random silliness. Until, you know, you could get a whole episode with a bunch of impressions of basketball great Bill Walton and very little actual TV information, which was fine with me because it was hilarious. And, they would progressively as the Chronicle was downsizing and shifting and changing their paradigms and all that, you sort of had this mythology building up as they would describe how they had the Podcave studio on the third floor that was deserted now, and they were just, you know, fires in garbage barrels on desks and papers strewn all over, and, you know, squatters living in different pod caves, and it was kind of a post-apocalyptic mainstream media press nightmare. It was great. So I would listen to that every week. And at the same time, I started, that's around when The Incomparable itself started. Because, of course, that was sort of the progression from the TV.net. Was it TV.net or TV.org? I always forget. But whichever was the website that Jason and Phil and Lisa and Steve and everybody was doing years and years ago. And I had been reading them for pretty much from day one with that. And then, of course, you know, everybody got day jobs, everybody had children, everybody had less time to write tons and tons of TV reviews every day. And they eventually sort of said, you know, we could do this podcasting thing. It's just us having a conversation once a week. That's easy, right? And so when that showed up, I was like, oh, wait, I know those guys. Meanwhile, jumping back to the TV talk machine, every now and then, Tim would do viewer mail, and he would say, oh, it's listener Jason from the 415. And eventually, listener Jason started helping out occasionally with the theme music and helping out sometimes with engineering. And then we found out that listener Jason was actually the editor of a magazine down the street from the Chronicle offices. And then eventually, I can't remember exactly when it was, but there was this sort of circuit connecting and this spark that just went, oh my God, that's the same Jason. Oh my God. And yeah, that, but those two were like the first real podcasts that I obsessively downloaded and subscribed to. I mean, I listened to things off and on just to try them out. But those are probably the longest ones I've listened to. And yeah.
That's fantastic. And our listeners will recognize TV.org because Monty just talked about that in the previous episode, oh, which is fantastic. Well, there you go. That your timelines match up so, like, perfectly.
Well, it was funny because way, way back when that started, and they had a, you know, you could submit stuff and say, hey, would you like to write for us too? Because it started out as just a bunch of friends from college. And they slowly expanded out. And I always thought about trying to write for it, but I did have email correspondence. And I would comment on the site, and every year when they did their April Fool's thing where they would reskin the site as something and it would be brilliant. I mean, this is, I specialize in parody. I love good parody. Those annual web redos were some of the best parodies I've seen. One year they redid the site as the New York Times. One year they redid it as Wikipedia. One year they redid it as the ABC website and highlighting all sorts of new shows that didn't exist. And it was just brilliant. And everything connecting. I mean, just the granular, you know, this wasn't just, hey, I can do a Weird Al song. I mean, this was like a symphony, right? And so I appreciated that. So I appreciated that when they carried that over into the podcast, and every year April Fool's would be something else. So
that's so fun. What about you, Erica? What got you started listening to podcasts?
Well, I have told sort of the story of how I started listening to podcasts before, but there's actually a big chunk of it that I usually leave out, mostly because I usually forget about it, because it in my brain it's not the same thing. My actual first sort of introduction to like podcasting, like hearing the word podcast, was way back in 2005 when my friends back in Madison, my friends have a band called Sunspot. And Sunspot, actually, they have a podcast now called See You on the Other Side, but that's not actually their first podcast. Their very first dipping their toes into the podcasting realm was way back in May of 2005, where they started a podcast called Sunspot Road Mania. And they would just record something roughly once a week, usually when they were on tour, like so over a weekend or something like that, you know, recording in the van or recording after a show at a bar, that kind of thing. And I didn't really know what a podcast was, and I didn't have any kind of a podcatching device. So to me, it was just, I would, you know, when I remembered, go to their website and press play on a little bar on the website and listen there. And I mean, technically, that would have been also my first foray into podcasting, because occasionally I would actually be on these episodes, very rarely, but every once in a while I would be around, and, you know, they would just, you know, I would be there, so I would contribute. So I guess I often forget that I technically started podcasting back in the early aughts.
Wow.
Yep. But yeah, I kind of forgot about that. And, you know, I would occasionally listen online, but it wasn't like a part of my life. It wasn't part of my regular routine like it is now. And that actually started with, well, it all started when my grandpa died, which is such a weird way to start the story, but it's true. So I at the time lived in southern Wisconsin. My grandparents had lived in northern Wisconsin, and in order to help out with funeral arrangements and, you know, all the stuff that goes along with that, I ended up having to spend like a good week in the more northern part of Wisconsin. And I had this crappy little like flip phone, and I was dating a guy that I really wanted to keep in close contact with, and my phone died I was up north. And yeah, and while that so I was just like, well, you know, this will not do. So I went to a Sprint store and I bought myself one of them their smartphones, which I had been hearing so much about. And my sister had been bugging me to get on this new thing called Twitter, which I did not understand at all. But because I had a smartphone, I was like, all right, I will finally try this thing. And so I was following like 5 people, which were, you know, people I knew. And then my friend Dan retweeted something from some comedian I'd never heard of who happened to be talking about Doctor Who. And I was like, oh, this guy talks about Doctor Who. I should follow him. And it was actually Chris Hardwick, also, who's a noted Doctor Who fan, and the founder of the Nerdist podcast, which my friend Dan also listened to. And eventually I was like, all right, I'll give this podcast thing a try. So the Nerdist was the first podcast that I actually listened to sort of as a podcast on my phone. And it really clicked with me. It was just people, for the most part at that time, sitting around and talking about their lives and crap and being nerdy and making jokes. And those are things that I can relate to. I like sitting around and talking about my life and being nerdy and making jokes. And not too long into the time when I was listening to that, I was following Chris Hardwick online. And then I also started following Kyle Anderson, who writes for the Nerdist website. He wrote all the Doctor Who articles at the time. That was his thing. Now he's an editor. And he was on Twitter. And at one point, I saw a tweet from either him or Chris Hardwick or both saying that they were going to be interviewed on a podcast called Radio Free Scarrow, which was a Doctor Who podcast. And my little brain just melted. I was like, oh, there's an entire podcast devoted to Doctor Who? And as a giant Doctor Who fan, I was just super thrilled. Little did I know, at the time, there were already, I think, 80. But I didn't know that. So to me, it was new and exciting. So I listened to their interview episode, which was already, I think, episode 242 or something.
Wow.
Radio Free Scarrow, because they started in 2006. And it was both interviews were delightful. And then I kind of dipped back into the back catalog and started listening to other episodes and was just like, there are 3 Canadian guys who once a week talk about my favorite TV show. This is amazing. And from following them on Twitter, I discovered that there were lots of other Doctor Who podcasts. So I subscribed to a bunch of them and found this whole community of Doctor Who podcast people, podcasters and listeners and fans and stuff online. And it was just like finding this family that I hadn't known was out there. And it was like coming home. And and yeah, and then eventually I started communicating with the hosts of Radio Free Skaro, and one in particular. And, you know, one thing led to another, and we ended up getting married at a Doctor Who convention, and a year later I moved to Canada. So
Yay.
Podcasting has made a huge difference in
just
my life.
Little, just a little significance bit. To your life.
Yep.
Yeah, just a touch. I love it. Wow. Love it. Okay, David, so tell me, what made you actually want to start making podcasts?
Well, you know, the whole thing of, you know, one, find an idea, two, start podcasting, three, for profit. I was thinking profit? No, totally. I really was. No. Way back, I thought, you know, there's something here, right? There's, you know, endless opportunity. It's really easy to do. There's no gatekeeper to what you make compared to other mediums, right? Or media. So I was like, well, what can I do? And I mean, I come from theater, but of course theater people tend to be busy when you need them to be free to do something like, you know, oh, let's do a radio play. It's very complicated to get theater people in a room sometimes to do this. But you can't say, hey, theater people, you could do this with Skype and call recorder and Audacity and all these things. They're like, I'm not technical at all. It's like, no, I know that. So I was like, well, you know, maybe someday I can figure this out. And I had ideas, and I did do some theater podcasting, very, very briefly, just trying it out, trying to see if this was a thing we could do. And we may yet bring that back at the 2 a.m. theater website. We'll see. Radio theater is kind of taking more of my brain and energy, and it's paying off more, so I wonder which one I'm going to focus on. But really, I think it was Jason, a little over 2 years into The Incomparable, they were talking about, what are we going to do this year for April Fools? Right? 1 year they did a game show episode, and 1 year they did, I think they did one where it was an alternate universe where everyone changed personalities and catchphrases and running jokes. And they were like, well, what do we do this year? And we had, you know, we had all been chatting on Twitter anyway, you know, kind of, you know, oh, it's Listener David. And out of the blue one day, I think it was in a December, maybe it was December 2012, I get this email from Jason. And he says, you know, we've been thinking we'd kind of like to do a radio play, and you're the only playwright we know. Would you do the April Fool's episode? I'm like, sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I could do that. And then I, you know, didn't do anything for several weeks, because that's how writers work. And
right.
But, you know, ideas were percolating. I was like, you know, what could I do? I knew it had to be something that at least fit the general feel of The Incomparable. So it should be something pop culture, genre, something like that. It should have as many in-jokes and running jokes from the show as I can stick in there in places. You know, let's make fun of Glenn and, you know, things like that. And, but I was just kind of stumped. It's like, I don't know what we could do as a story. You know, what is the story of this thing? Well, maybe it's a science fiction thing. I don't know. But, you know, we kind of criticize a lot of science fiction. We tear it apart. We look and, you know, so it's got to be something really good. And then my brain went, or something really silly. And I don't know. Maybe it was about 24 hours later, I suddenly had the idea for four different little tiny radio shows as if this were a network in the 40s. And, you know, you could hit different genres. You could have the masked Avenger like The Shadow, and you could have the boy space cadet, and you could have the time-traveling genius in a box. You know, what if Doctor Who were a radio show in the United States in the 1940s? It's Nikola Tesla. There. Done. Very easy. Right? And once I had that, I wrote the thing in like 48 hours. Boom. There it was. And we recorded it, and it was great fun. And we thought, well, that's it. That's, you know, we've done it. And after it went out, fans went crazy. you know, they're tweeting us and, oh my God, this is great. This is great. When are you doing another one? And we all kind of looked at each other and went, are we doing another one? And I mean, as a result of that, Jason said, you know, well, you're part of the show now. Do you want to come on panels? Little did he know. And I mean, the first couple of episodes I'm on as a panelist, I'm very quiet. If you listen to the show now and you have come to recognize my verbal tics and jokes and everything, go back and listen to like the Wrinkle in Time episode. It's totally different. I do not sound like me. I'm very timid. And it literally is a case of me forgetting that I'm actually in the show instead of just listening to it, because I had listened to 139 episodes at that point. And it's like, oh, wait, I can say something. Oh, Lisa, yes, I agree with you. Yes. So, yeah, it's very, you see a progression if you go back and listen in order. But yeah, we did the Christmas episode that year. It was twice as long as the April Fool's episode. It was a crazier thing. But you can see a definite jump. Like the first, the April Fool's one is just, well, let's have fun. And it's very silly and it's very loose. And there is no, even a notion of doing anything else with this. And the Christmas one, everything is a little more fine-tuned. It's sharply written. It's, you know, I'm beginning to think, okay, maybe there is more to this. But I still wasn't thinking beyond the show. I was like, this is the show, and that's what we're doing. And then it'll be done, right? And we released it on Christmas Day, and immediately the response was, when's the spinoff? And Jason and Serenity and I started emailing going, is there a spinoff? I don't know if there's a spinoff. We could do a spinoff. That would be crazy. And the next day I wrote and I said, I just had a really good idea for a Tesla story. I think there's a spinoff here. and so that was kind of it. I mean, all the other stuff I've done in podcasting and all the other stuff I've done on The Incomparable, whether as a guest or a host, has just been this, right? It's a conversation. This is not very taxing on the brain, right? Except, you know, trying to sound smart and ad-libbing and whatever. but it's not, you know, there's no work to it. Once you've said everything, you're done.
Right.
You know, there's a little bit of editing. There's a little bit of finesse. And doing the radio theater is a lot of work. It takes about an hour per minute of every episode. Some go faster, some are easier, some are harder. There's some where I've had to do triage on the audio for each thing, and it's sort of like, oh, Glenn has a thing in the background that's making noise, or oh, the Skype track is the only one we have and not the native recording, and how do I finesse that? And oh, you recorded in an echoey room. Oh no. So between that and then creating the sound bed, the soundscape for it, because you need it to sound realistic. The first time we did this, Jason put out a rough cut, and we all listened to it and went, well, it's good, but it sounds wrong. What's wrong with
it? Right, what's missing?
Right. There was no ambient noise. There was no movement, right? Even though clearly by the dialogue, people are moving around, there's no movement in the sound. And we went, oh, this has to be stereo. It has to pan. You know, if someone is walking from one side of the room to the other, they have to walk from one ear to the other. And their voice has to follow. And you sort of have rising and falling. And you have just, even just like the hum of a spaceship or the ambient noise of the air in an office building, that's enough to suddenly make it go, oh, I believe that they're actually in this place. I can hear the place, right?
Make it feel alive.
Right, right. And that takes a lot of work to sort of fine-tune that and to say, oh, I've put too much in, or I need to pull that back, or, oh, I need one more element here. And sometimes in a particularly silly episode, it's like, well, what can I add in here that will make listeners, I almost said viewers, make listeners go, what was that? Right? Like, you know, a normal little foresty thing, but I'll have llamas in the background if you listen carefully, right? Just weird little things like that. So it is kind of more time intensive than I thought, but at the same time, as much as I love the writing of it, and God knows I love the writing, there is nothing like recording and then editing it, making it come to life. That is just exciting. So that's kind of how I fell into it and why I'm still here. You know, this is like a vacation from the radio.
Nice and easy, just talk about things as opposed to all
right,
of the work.
Right.
Yeah, I can't even imagine but I'm also not a writer, so like I don't even have that urge other than the like, oh yeah, it would be great if I could write, but I don't actually want it because the stress level and like just the pressure and yeah, I can't even imagine.
I get people who are like, how do you have so many ideas? How do you keep doing that? How much work goes into that? And yeah, there are some things I will outline and like really focus on, you know, okay, this needs to be good. When I'm writing something for the stage, yeah, I'm going to put a little work into it. The radio theater episodes are remarkably just almost like improv as I type, partly because I know the voices. I know the people I'm writing for, which helps.
Right.
I know what each person can do. I know that Glenn can do this. I know that Glenn has trouble saying what's that the first time we record this. So let's make that his catchphrase from now on. We have 30 minutes of Glenn and Serenity going, what's that? No, Glenn, what's that? What's that? No, Glenn, what's 30 minutes? It's brilliant. But yeah, they just sort of come out. And depending, you know, I could do a full series of nothing but Tesla stories or a full series of nothing but The Fog or Commander Jetpack. I have notes for all of these things now because an idea will hit me and I go, oh, but I don't sit down and outline it. The only ones I outline are the ones like the recent two-parter with Tesla bouncing back and forth between, let's see. Well, it's a story that takes place over the course of four millennia. So, a lot of stuff. So, and because it loops in and out of itself, like any good Stephen Moffat time twist puzzle thing,
right.
It has to be rigidly logical. And it would be an okay story if everything in it were told linearly, but it wouldn't work as well if everything were in chronological order. You have to have it out of order to create the suspense and to know the things you need to know when you need to know them.
Right.
And that does take work. There's another Tesla two-parter from the first season that's basically a bedroom farce. And bedroom farce is very precise in how, who is in what room, where, when, who is lying to whom, why, you know, all of that stuff. And I had always wanted to do a bedroom farce with Erwin Schrödinger, because if the mistress is in the room, nobody knows if the mistress is there until they open the door, right? It's a very simple joke, but considering the fact that Schrödinger actually had several mistresses and a common law wife who lived with him and his wife, it was like, oh, I could do a bedroom farce with him and put Tesla in the middle of it. It's a time travel story with this really obscure physics joke. So I planned that. I worked on that. But I would say 90% of the episodes are just, you know, it's just from having listened to all these kind of shows so many years, it's ingrained. Like I can write a murder mystery without really thinking about it, as long as it's funny, as long as the hard part is like, oh, I need jokes. Where are the
right.
jokes? Right. So yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, that's maybe part of why I love the job so much, is that it is so, so easy.
Comparatively. Okay, so Erica, we know you started a little bit on the Sunspot podcast, but what about your own, I want to start a podcast and help other people start podcasts too. I mean, that's a big part of what you do. And that takes more, that takes a love of the art for sure.
Yeah, I think when I first started listening to podcasts, you know, when I discovered all the Doctor Who podcasts, I went hardcore. I listened to so many and really almost entirely Doctor Who podcasts for a long time. And I found this was it was a subject that I knew not nearly as well as a lot of the people that were podcasting, but better than some, and that I had opinions about and feelings. And, like, you know, I know a lot of people talk about that they talk back to their phone or their podcast device. And that was me. Like, I wanted to have my say. And one nice thing about a lot of the fan run Doctor Who podcasts that I listened to was that they would do, like, listener letters or listener audio feedback. So I started by, you know, I would send in, answer questions or send in comments or tweet at podcasts, and they would read that out online. And then I even recorded some, like, audio feedbacks to a couple of podcasts. You know, they would record about some episode, and then I would be like, oh, they got something wrong or they missed something. And I would, you know, just a couple minutes. I wasn't one of those obnoxious people that sent in 10 minutes of my voice. Because there were people that did that, and there were podcasts that would play that, and I was just like, oh my God, no.
Why did you choose this? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And there was the sadly now defunct Doctor Who Book Club podcast they would have people do readings of just, like, you know, they would choose a short selection from the book and ask somebody either on another podcast or a listener to record that bit of the book. So I think that was my first, like, official bit of podcasting, was reading a page or two from some Doctor Who New Adventures novel. I don't even remember what it was at this point. But I was so nervous and so excited to do this that I managed to, like, jerry-rig a microphone stand out of, like, my vacuum cleaner and a yardstick and some rubber bands and a thing of chapstick. And, like, it was super MacGyver. And then I needed a microphone, like a pops filter for the microphone.
Right.
So I used some, like, old pantyhose and a hanger. And,
nice.
I can't remember what random thing from my house I used to actually get that to, like, stand up. But it was just, I have a picture of it somewhere. It is insane. All the pieces of my
old pop filter used to be hosiery and a, whatchamacallit, an embroidery hoop.
Oh, nice.
See, that's a really good idea, too.
Yeah, because you can trap it inside and make it really taut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I only got a boom, like, 2 months ago. All these years, I finally have, like, a real setup.
You're like, I'm a real podcaster now.
Yeah. The microphone I used at the time was, I think, the microphone I had for my Xbox 360 for Rock Band.
Nice.
So it wasn't great sound. But, but it was just, like, I immediately gravitated toward it, and it felt good and it felt fun. And then I moved to sort of being a guest on a couple of podcasts that regularly brought in people to do guesting over Skype. And that was just great, because being able to actually talk back to the people and have them talk back at you was much better than just recording audio feedback and sending it in. And I really did kind of want to start a podcast, but I have always been, I mean, I kind of have that stereotypical Midwestern, you know, I don't want to be a bother. I just want to be nice and polite sort of a personality. Only, like, ratchet that up to 10. I've always been, like, extra shy. So, like, you know, uber Midwesterner. And there's no way I would have actually just started a podcast on my own. I really fell into it because I was sort of lucky. And my now co-host Deb, actually my co-host for Beginner's Puck and for Verity, she had for years been complaining about as much as she loved all of the Doctor Who podcasts she listened to, the landscape was almost entirely dudes. Almost entirely.
Right.
There was one podcast that was two women, but it was not very often and not that great. Mm-hmm. And then a couple other podcasts that had, like, a woman on them or a woman who was a contributor occasionally. And, like, this was a very common refrain in the bar when we'd had a few drinks, just, like, you know, the rant would start. And one day she was ranting about it on Twitter, and our other co-host Lynn's husband Michael, who is a noted internet instigator, piped up and said, you know what, Deb, you need to put your money where your mouth is. You should start an all female Doctor Who podcast. You know, and he was like, you know, there are women podcasters out there that could probably help you out. How about these people? And he proceeded to tag five people, myself included. And that actually ended up becoming who is on Verity. And Deb and I were actually sending emails to each other that passed each other on the internets after that tweet went off, because we were like, is that a thing we could do? Can we do that thing? And Deb was like, I could totally plan a podcast, but I don't know how to record and I can't push buttons. And my email was saying, I can totally push buttons and I know how to record a podcast, but I have no idea what to talk about or what to say. So it was like
a match made in heaven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's how Verity, my first podcast, started. And I felt pretty confident about the technical aspects of it right away. But I was like David was saying, if you go back and listen to the early episodes of Verity, I talk, but I don't talk a lot, and I don't sound sure of myself and of what I'm saying. It took a good long time to really kind of develop those muscles for critique and feeling comfortable expressing that critique aloud amongst other people, knowing that it's going to go out to thousands of people on the internet,
who will also have many opinions.
Exactly, and especially when it was a podcast coming into a male-dominated, sort of realm, and it's all women. Like, that was a little bit scary in and of itself. We were pretty lucky. We didn't get a whole lot of awful, flaming feedback. And then honestly, it was kind of like a disease. It just sort of spread from there.
I don't know about you particularly, although Edmonton is, a little far away. Part of it for me is being out in the middle of nowhere here. This is, I get to talk with my podcast pals a couple of times a week and be silly and have all kinds of, I can talk about all the things I would want to talk about if you all were here in person. And I don't have that tribe here, and I'm okay with that. But it does keep me sane in the middle of Pawnee, Indiana.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a bigger thing for me now, because when I first started podcasting, I was in Madison.
Right.
And then after Stephen and I got married and eventually I was able to emigrate to Canada, I moved 1,500 miles away from all of my friends and family.
Right.
So I would say at this point, a good 85% of my social interaction comes from podcasting, which is, I think, why I seem to collect them.
Yeah, it's about right.
That makes sense. Yeah, I work from home. I rarely leave the house, and so getting to talk to people in real life is pretty great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do have a day job, so I get social interaction with some pretty cool people because I'm lucky and I have pretty great coworkers. Some of whom listen to The Incomparable,
poor people.
But it's not quite the same as, my pals that I hang out with on a regular basis.
Right.
Which is what I see all of you folks as.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I am honored to be one of those folks.
I'm so happy you've joined us.
Vice versa. Yeah.
Me too. I love the relationships that I've already made. And it's only been a couple months, so I can't wait to see in the future how it goes. It's a joy. It's such a joy.
Wait. Just wait till you get those radio theater groupies.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Wait, we have those?
Yeah, haven't you met them at the convention? They're the huge fan people with the signs and stuff. Oh wait, that was me.
Oh yeah. Hey, it was amazing going to PodCon where I was just a guest and running into all kinds of people who are like, "Oh my god, it's David." Hi. How's the radio theater coming? It's coming. It's thank you. Okay.
Right. Yeah. That's what I love about podcasting is that there isn't necessarily that direct interaction. So we don't really know, except for feedback or, tweets and emails and whatnot from people. We don't know how much it touches their lives until, we meet someone in person or they reach out to us. But when you're making it, it's very intimate. It's very, there's just the three of us right now. But as a listener, and the fact that most people that are on podcasts started as listeners, it's so interesting to be able to be on both sides at the same time. So anyone that's listening to my voice right now, I've been there. I know that relationship that you build, even if you haven't met somebody yet. It's just, it's so, I love it. And that's where the name right. of the podcast came from. You know, we're your friends in your ears. You just aren't in person. And I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And it is literally friends in your ears.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So let's get to the main question. David J. Lohr, what is your favorite podcast and why?
Why, it's the incomparable no. I will recuse. I mean, I can honestly say it is my favorite podcast, but I will recuse myself from that because come on. I've got two answers because I have a favorite incomparable podcast or two, and then a favorite non, because you know it shouldn't just be, hey, I listen to the incomparable.
Right.
So I'll just sort of breeze through that. My very favorite incomparable podcast that I don't do is Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies, because Phil and Lisa are hilarious together. And it, even though it is all off the cuff, it is all improvisation because they're just having a conversation. It sounds like they've planned it, but they're just that funny. They just are. There are no other guests, unless Phil does the voice of Progressive Red Skull, which is always worth a listen. And yeah, it's just the two of them tearing apart movie trailers and occasionally a movie. And occasionally a listener will pay to have them watch a movie and tear it apart. I remember listening to them ripping apart the movie Burnt with Bradley Cooper. And it is, well, the only reason to watch that movie is to listen to them tear it apart afterwards. It really is. So I love that. And I love the game show, especially the ones I'm not on, because I still have PTSD from the ones that I am on.
Yeah, but, don't we all?
Yeah. But it's just, it's like a train wreck waiting to happen every time, and it's always hilarious. Doesn't matter what the game is, doesn't matter who the panelists are. It is just sheer delight every time.
Yeah.
So having done that, and I will refrain from mentioning Rodeo Baby. my favorite non incomparable podcasts. I have quite a few that I listen to off and on. Like I'll binge them, and I listen to a lot of the ones that everybody knows, like Night Vale and Magic Tavern, and you know that's fine. But the ones that I When someone says, what should I listen to? What's going to hook me? I mean, yeah, you can find all of those things on any list. The ones I listen to because I want to hear them, if that makes sense. I mean, it's not that I don't want to hear the others, but the ones that I'll listen to the day they come out. The Memory Palace by Nate DeMeo, which is now part of Radiotopia. It is just these little stories from history. Often forgotten stories, little snippets of fragments of history that you may never have known that suddenly connect to something that you did. And you go, oh, I had no idea that that's what caused this, right? And he is such an engaging storyteller. There have been countless episodes of that where I've thought, I want to write a play based on that, right? There is more than an 8-minute story in this story, but the episodes are very short. You can binge your way through 20 of them without thinking. It is just one of the best storytelling story podcasts out there, and the amazing thing is that it is all true. The other one that I listen to the day it comes out is Five Things, hosted by Tara Anderson. She works for the public radio station here in Louisville, Kentucky. She's also been on Pod for Ham on The Incomparable several times. It is a show inspired by a play, believe it or not, where the idea is each guest, and there's only one guest per episode, but each guest brings five objects, five important things, five things they could not live without, and then explains why. Over the course of an hour. And it's kind of fascinating listening to people. Why this object? Why this abstract thing? That's not even an object. Why are you choosing that as one of your five things? It's kind of like Desert Island Discs, but for things. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating to see what objects sort of acquire deep meaning for people.
Right.
I mean, for me, she asked me if I was going to be on, what would I pick? And I'm still thinking. One of them I know would be my childhood Paddington Bear, which is still sitting on my nightstand. He's, let's see, last month marks 38 years that I've had him. And he has seen me through everything. So clearly that is one of my five things. And there's no, I mean, it's not just that I love Paddington the books and all that stuff. This was my childhood pal. This was the bear that got me through everything difficult about childhood. And so he has this deeper meaning for me than just, oh, it's their funny books. I like them. Right.
Right.
So it's interesting to hear what other people have like that. So it's well worth listening to. Beyond that, I mean, I listen to a lot of BBC, a lot of BBC panel shows and comedy shows, the occasional sitcom. But yeah, just as pure podcasts go, The Memory Palace and Five Things.
Love it. I'm really excited to go listen to The Memory Palace now, because that sounds so interesting. I love history bits, you know, stuff you missed in history class, and those podcasts are some of my favorites. And being able to have like these shorter stories makes me really, yeah. So I am subscribing to that right now.
They really go down easily, and they're, like I said, even without having the writing bug, you'll sit there and go, this needs to be more. This needs to be a play. This needs to be a movie. So right. Many good stories.
Love it. All right, Erica, what is your favorite podcast and why?
Oh, I hate this question so much. And you know, at other times in my life, I totally would have been able to answer this, because there have definitely been times where I've just been so het up about some specific podcast. And, you know, I've just discovered, I'm dipping into its back catalog, I'm mainlining all of the episodes, and I am not in a place like that at all, and I haven't been for a really long time. So when you told me you were going to ask me what's my favorite podcast, I was like, I don't know. So,
I mean, it's okay if you want to say radio theater. That's fine. I'm totally fine.
Well, I started flipping through my podcatcher to like see what are the things that I am subscribed to, and like I kind of tried to look at the question in two different ways. So there's the what are the podcasts that I zip to the top of the playlist as soon as they come out and I want to listen to, and then on the other side there are what are the podcasts that just like bring my heart the most joy.
Right.
And those aren't necessarily the same things, because I find that quite often if there's a podcast that I know is going to just make me feel good and warm and fuzzy and happy, I will save that. I will ration that for a time that I really need it, as right. opposed to a podcast that is, you know, I'm just interested in seeing what these people have to say right away. Those will go to the top, and that, you know, may or may not bring me the same kind of deep heartfelt joy. So while I was able to like identify a number of podcasts, like, I mean, obviously, I listen to some hockey podcasts. So those tend to go to the top of the list because they're timely. And I want to know, you know, what these
right.
people are saying about the hockey that happened just this week. So like, you know, if an episode of Hockey Feels drops, which, full disclosure, my spouse Steven is on one of the hosts, like that will go to the top of the list. Also his Doctor Who podcast, because, you know, It's the Radio Free Skaro is still, like, you know, that was one of my very first, and is the one that has stayed through everything. But when it comes to like just pure joy. And I hate to say it because it's actually a podcast that I'm on, probably Total Party Kill. And I haven't been on every episode of Total Party Kill. So it's not like it's my podcast. I'm not the, right. You know, I'm not running the adventures. I just show up and play. And a lot of the times, the bits that make me laugh the most and that make me the happiest are the bits that my character has nothing to do with, because I wisely stayed behind to do something smart, and ridiculous people have gone off on their own to try some random crazy act of mayhem. So, I mean, if we're disqualifying podcasts we're on, then I would take TPK out of the running. But otherwise, I think it's probably up at the top there. And the only other one that I would kind of want to mention, which kind of bridges the gap between both of them, it's a sort of a limited run podcast. They do seasons, so it's not always available. So when it is, I usually listen to it right away. And I really, really enjoy what they're talking about is Invisibilia. Which is one of the NPR podcasts, and they talk about sort of like the invisible things in the world. So they have episodes about interesting topics that I would not have ever thought to think about, like a fellow who is blind and learns how to basically see by echolocation by making clicking sounds with his tongue. And they talk to him and about like the brain research that's been done to show what's happening to people's brains when that happens, or a town in Europe where people are treated for their mental health diseases by just, you know, living in homes with nice, kind people. And so many fascinating topics that that they usually do, I think, a great job of digging into and learning about. So if that sounds remotely interesting to you, check out Invisibilia. They don't have that many episodes. So I haven't listened to one in a long time, but and it's not the kind of podcast that I will go back and re-listen to. But when it comes out, that usually shoots to the top of the list.
I love it. That sounds so intriguing. Again, the not too many episodes is perfect, especially because as I'm doing this podcast, I now have added like a dozen new shows.
I bet.
Yeah. I need to up my listening, I think. Yes, it's acceptable to choose your podcast that you're on as long as it's not the ones you're hosting or writing, David, pointing at you. So Total Party Kill totally counts, but I think
Invisibilia.
Invisibilia, I think, may be marked down as your favorite because your voice changed when you were talking about it. You got really excited. The joy just spread.
And, hooray.
And I will say, you know, it is hard working at home, finding time to listen to podcasts. You know, we don't have a commute. Right. When are we going to listen to them? I listen to them going to sleep. I just put the earbud in my ear, lie on the pillow on top of it, and fall asleep listening to stuff. That's when I have free time.
I do have a commute, but my walk to work is only like 15 minutes, so it's not much of a commute. I've actually started using my lunch breaks to catch up on podcasts. So like I've just brought my knitting to work and I'll just listen to a podcast and knit. I had been reading, but I was like, I'm running behind on my podcast, so let's change things up.
Yeah, I do it a lot when I'm walking the dog, when I'm doing dishes, when I'm cooking dinner, those types of things.
Right. Mowing the lawn. And,
yeah, I don't do that, but I would. Well. If I did mow the lawn, I would totally do it then, too. A lot of driving.
I don't have a lawn.
To get grocery shopping or whatnot. Yeah. All right. So now we're down to the final question, which is a surprise question for you guys. So take deep breaths. All right. You are standing at the entrance of a frozen yogurt shop.
Oh, God, this is like Action Castle again. No, I'm okay.
What yogurt do you choose and what toppings do you put on it? And, of course, this is imaginary, so no allergies exist and there are no calories in it. So fill her up.
Guava with fruity pebbles. Ooh. Believe it or not.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't really have a lot of experience with frozen yogurt, I have to admit. I grew up in Wisconsin where it was frozen custard, not frozen yogurt.
Okay, well, fine. It can be frozen custard. That's acceptable as well.
Oh, okay. That makes it so much easier because I feel like the yogurty flavor would not necessarily go well with the with what I would want, which would be like the richest, most decadent... wait, how many scoops do we get here?
However, it just, it's imaginary. Okay. It can be whatever you want.
Because I will often, because I'm not a good decider, I will often do two scoops. And one would be Blue Moon, which is, if you're not familiar with Blue Moon, it is a blue concoction that tastes like the milk that's left over after you've eaten a bowl of Fruit Loops.
Ooh.
Only much stronger, obviously.
Right.
And then also something very, very like caramel with a little bit of like coffee-ish stuff swirled in, like Ooh. Caramel with a coffee swirl.
I like the way you think. Ooh.
Really, really rich. I mean, those, I admit those two flavors do not mix together well. So the trick is you have to eat them one
separately
of them really
yeah.
quickly before it melts all into right. the other one. But it's just a challenge to try to eat it as fast as you can, which I pretty much do anyway.
Yeah. See, mine was, one of the first times I went to a frozen yogurt place was when I was in Washington, D.C. for the Capital Fringe Festival one year. And the actress who was doing my show dragged me into the place, was like, hey, let's get frozen yogurt. I'm like, well, okay, sure. And we're going down the line and we said, all right, what, you know, tell us what's a good combination. And the guy says, oh, guava with fruity pebbles. And we both looked at him like...
like he was crazy?
Yeah, we had to pick our jaws up off the floor and go, hang on, what do you mean? And he said, no, try, I'll, here, have a sample. Try a sample. And something I had never realized, fruity pebbles are bergamot. That's Earl Grey.
Oh.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's why Earl Grey smells like fruity pebbles.
Exactly. And you put that...
Actually, Blue Moon is the same flavor.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. And mm-hmm. so you put that with guava, and you get a little bit of crunch. I mean, I don't care about toppings usually, but if I have to have toppings... Mm-hmm. That's my combination yes. now. I've tried other things, but it's just the bergamot and the guava are a beautiful combination. And you can make that with, like, good desserts, too. You know, combine some Earl Grey with, you know. But if it's frozen yogurt, yes. there you go.
And now I need to find
good.
A frozen
if
yogurt.
I have to go to one of those... If I have to go to one of those like marble slab creamery or Cold Stone creamery places where they mix things together, my usual order there is coffee flavored ice cream with Heath bar or score, something toffee related on the inside to kind of give me that coffee and caramel toffee flavor. Oh. It's not quite as good as, you know, good old frozen custard.
Right.
That's
right.
Like super high fat content, but you know, you do what you can.
Another
There's no frozen custard in Edmonton. It's very sad.
Oh,
another
sad.
Fun thing is to do a milkshake that's half coffee ice cream and half cinnamon ice cream. That works surprisingly well.
Yeah, we have a coffee place called Dutch Brothers that they have, that's one of their specialties is like a mocha with dark chocolate and cinnamon. I'm not a huge cinnamon fan, but I will steal, if someone else gets that drink, I will steal some of it because it tastes good. Not enough for a whole thing. But enough to enjoy the flavor of it.
You're listening Yum. To Frozen Dessert in your ears.
Right? And now that I need dessert before our next podcast that we record.
yes.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode of Friends in Your Ears. You can find us online at friendsinyourears.com or the show is on Twitter at Friends in Ears. You can find David at DLore on Twitter and Erica at Holly Go Darkly, and I am at Mrs. Soup. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you have a fantastic day today.